This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
All right, what does a bad draft even look like for the Texans at this point? This was Nick Caserio, Hardo Caserio, focused, blood-smelling Caserio, just a few minutes ago, 1 week from the draft. This was Nick Caserio talking about the offseason that was, expectations, all that type of stuff.
The offseason and some of the things that we've done, I mean, frankly, it's kind of laughable. I mean, it's so early. I mean, we haven't done anything. So what happened last year has no bearing on this year. So we're focused on right now. We're focused on the present. We're focused on improvement. And I think the players' focus is just on their attitude, their effort, and their commitment to being a good player. So outside of that, I mean, the rest of it is just a bunch of garbage. Hopefully we've improved the team. We're really not going to know if we have or not until training camp. I would say, and honestly, I think the division, when you look at what the other teams around us have done a great job. So, you know, hopefully we can keep pace with what's going on in division as well.
All right, there you go. That's Nick Caserio. Hardo thinks it's ridiculous. I feel attacked. But what does a disappointing draft look like? Like, what is there anything that the Texans could do? Because at this point, like, normally I'll approach the draft. I'll have my opinions, as silly as that might be. Sometimes you're disappointed the day after the draft. Sometimes you end up looking silly. Sometimes you're excited. You end up looking silly as well. Silly season's a thing. But in this scenario, with where they are, with where the trust level is, with the fact that it appears the Texans have earned the benefit of the doubt, what does people being disappointed about the draft even look like? Because I'm having an impossible time imagining it.
Well, it definitely can't happen in the way that he's talking about it. Like, he's talking about how silly it is that, you know, the day after or the day of, immediately after the draft, you got the immediate reaction of draft grades. I got a tough time seeing how the immediate reaction is going to be a negative draft grade because of all of this trust, because of everything that they've done, because of all of the equity that they've built. It's literally one of those wait and see. Like, you're not going to be able to give it a negative draft grade. You just kind of give them the benefit of the doubt. Won't be able to give them that negative grade until they actually have a draft full of King and Greens or Brandon Hills, who we mentioned in the press conference, like something like that, a bunch of dudes that don't contribute. Then it looks like a bad draft, but we have no way of knowing that ahead of time. And they got the credibility already built up.
I'm going to go ahead and stick my chest out and say what would disappoint me in this draft. I don't have a specific thing that I want them to do at 42. I don't have a specific thing that I want them to do later on in the draft. But for me, what disappointment looks like in this draft is ignoring two positions, tight end and running back. That would be the disappointing thing for me, because I think that's proactive and realistic improvement. Yeah. You can say we need a defensive lineman and we're going to take the best defensive lineman available in the second round, and it's a cluster. It's going to be hard to find that guy. Last time they did that, they got Ross Blacklock. Ross Blacklock lasted a couple of years on the team, so that did not go well. But when it comes to the tight end position and when it comes to the running back position, especially with how the draft is laid out, I think they have opportunity there to get guys that can contribute. And I think there's a number of guys that they can get there to contribute. So the neglect of those two positions for me would be the most disappointing thing, because I think they need multiple backs that can make plays, and I think they need to improve the tight end position. Let's not forget this. Part of the reason that Dalton Schultz got his deal on top of what he did last year is because the tight end market was so bad.
Yep. benefited from the market the way he didn't the year before.
And they still need tight ends that can block. Right now they have Brevin Jordan after him. The guy that you thought was going to be the blocking tight end was Teagan Quinteriano. He can't stay healthy, so we don't know what the heck he's going to be. Running back, you feel good about Joe Mixon, but do you want to ask Joe Mixon to play 80, 85% of the time? It's not a good idea. So for me, as far as disappointment, and I think this is kind of proportional to where they are, because it's not like it's the end of the world if it doesn't happen, but ignoring the tight end and running back position for me, that would be what would make me somewhat disappointed from this whole thing, as opposed to them drafting this guy and I like this guy better. I'm not as much in that business as I once was. Still give the opinion, but because it is such a cluster, I'm not like pounding the table say you got to take this guy instead of that guy, especially based on where they're picking.
See, I like that you're super specific with the positions that you would be disappointed with them not coming away with, but the only one I can 100% get what you on is actually running back, because, and here's why. If they don't get the tight end, all right, if they don't spend a, you know, let's say one of their higher picks on a tight end, but they do so on a receiver and they still get a weapon, then I'm only going to really still be side-eyeing running back, because that's where I got the most questions. I do expect Dalton Schultz to be their primary tight end for better and worse, right? For his strengths and his weaknesses. It would confuse me a little bit if they didn't get a tight end, but I think I would be more so disappointed if you come away from this and you ain't drafted a tight end, a running back, or a wide receiver, and you don't have any weapons that you've added. That would be the only way, but I also can't really see that happening.
I see no chance in hell that they ignore running back today or
next week.
I see no chance in hell. I was talking to John Harris yesterday, Draft Mania, and there were three guys that he said that he likes at running back on day two at different times. He likes Trey Benson out of Florida State, who I do too. I think he's a stud.
Yep.
He likes Jonathan Brooks out of Texas. Don't like him as much as John Harris does. And he likes Jalen Wright out of Tennessee. And then there's some scat backs on day three that he could entertain. But those are the three backs that he likes. There's a chance you could get either one of those guys with your second, third-round pick.
Yeah.
And assuming that Joe Mixon isn't available the full time, I think you're doing a really good job there in adding those guys.
Yeah, and I really think, and I know obviously they didn't do it last year, but I wouldn't mind if they like drafted a running back every year. Like, to me, for the position, the way it's valued or devalued, it is best to get in on the running back early. I've always said I'm much more reluctant to pay a running back than I am to draft one, even with a higher pick. So I don't know if this would be as disappointing as it was. It would excite me if they use, as much as I'm into receiver, as much as we're into tight end, if they use one of those second-round picks on a running back, because that would not only would they be adding to the position, but they would be indicating to us how highly they think of a prospect like that. Like, they would be telling us, not only are we adding to this position, but we think that this guy could actually be a player for us. And that in and of itself would get me excited about whichever guy they drafted, if it's a running back. So I'm with you more so specifically on running back than tight end, as great as the need is there at tight end, to get somebody that can do everything.
Yeah, I think it's something to keep a very, very, very close eye on, the tight end and the running back position. Defensive lineman, John Harris likes Braden Fisk out of Florida State. He says if he's there, then let's make that pick. Okay, whatever. We can make that happen. He does think that that's a D'Amico guy. Perhaps he's not even there. But that's what the disappointment looks like for me, is not addressing that. Landry Locker, B. Scott here. Nick Caserio also was talking about just the overall outlook of the offseason, all that. Nick Caserio, here's what he had to say about that. And, man, this dude's in a mood today.
We have 9 picks. We'll see if that changes or stays static. But just given our history, it'll probably change at some point. Try to add the right people with the right mindset. We're not for everybody. Everybody's not for us, and that's okay. You know, we're just looking for the right people with the right mindset, that are right fit, that, you know, we think can help us win football games. So not to oversimplify it, but yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah, I mean, not to oversimplify it, but let's keep it dead ass simple. Let's keep it dead ass simple and just find the right guys. Hardo Nick today, man. We ain't, so is that a theme over there at NRG now, though? Because we've heard it from Will Anderson, and then we just heard it from Nick Caserio.
Yeah, what does that mean, though?
We ain't for everybody.
But here's the thing. I don't know what that means. Because
the standard is the standard?
Well, I don't know what that means because they brought in Stephon Diggs.
Right.
Like, in the past, if you would have thought, okay, this guy is not tough, smart, dependable, then I feel like not for everyone. I don't think it's like a set-in-stone type of thing. I don't think they look for certain personality traits when it comes to being a Texan. I think it's a lot more open than perhaps we may have thought. And I think that's kind of the transition. You talk about transitions. That's kind of the transition that my mind goes through when we're talking about this, because I don't think there's just like a set in stone, this guy's got to do this. I think they're more open to bringing guys in because of the culture that they've built with DeMeco Ryan, CJ Stroud, Will Anderson, all that.
But it also feels like they're about bucking narratives or just putting them off to the side, because, you know, based off of everything that we've heard between specifically, I guess, DeMeco and Nick Caserio, they clearly do not buy into this idea that Stephon Diggs, and the closest thing we got to validating it from anybody in charge over there was Cal McNair saying, hey, if he goes sideways a little bit, they might have to reel him in.
That was the best quote of the offseason for me.
Yeah.
Because that was Cal McNair when he was talking. I think that was the Bristol interview, Bristol, where Cal McNair didn't just come in and say, well, Stephon Diggs is perfectly going to buy into everything that the Texans have, and that strong personality that we've seen for 5 years is, you don't have to worry about it. Basically, what Cal McNair said is, you want guys who are intense. You want all types of personalities. I can't guarantee you that this personality is not going to, for lack of a better term, explode, but I would trust that the culture that we've built will be able to deal with it if it does get fired up. That was that for me. Like, when you talk about Cal McNair speaking and you talk about, you know, Cal McNair is built a certain way, that for me, that quote right there in the Jason Bristol interview, and you can check out the full thing on YouTube. Shout out to Bristol for getting that. But that to me was like the most realistic, transparent, confident, not BSing you display that I've seen from an owner in this town in a long time.
Yeah, it's a great quote from Cal, and like, you got to appreciate it. But at the same time, I would point out, like, more specific to how they feel about him coming in the building. Cal knows the least about the guy, and he even said that. I haven't met him. He obviously knows what the narrative is and what the discussion is. He was presented with the question. But, you know, you heard Nick Caserio talking about how him and DeMeco talk every day and how they actually talk to other people who know guys and they actually do their research. He talked about, apparently, Nick Caserio is an aggregator. He used the term aggregating a couple of times. I thought that was interesting. But they know the guy the best and felt comfortable not only making the deal but then restructuring the contract, and then have just really shrugged their shoulders at this idea that he's going to be some kind of malcontent. Cal knows the least about him. So he's, to me, Cal's coming from it just as the owner, but from a similar perspective as the rest of us. Like, hey, let's just see how it goes. Whereas I feel like Nick and DeMeco Ryans have a specific feeling and a good feeling about him being here.
Come a long way with the Texans. Very, very long way when it comes to what's going on with the Texans, the draft, all that type of stuff. And we should get a good idea of what exactly they're going to do sooner rather than later. He did pretty much hint that, you know, I'm Nick Caserio, I make trades, so there could be some trades coming through. Speaking of which,
for sure,
someone who was at the press conference, first guy to ask the Stephon Diggs question, by the way, Cody Stutes joins us right now, Houston Football. Cody Stutes, the Cody Stutes channel on YouTube. Cody, what was your biggest takeaway from Caserio? Kind of seemed like he was a little bit more hard-ass than we've seen Caserio in a long time.
I'd be scared to death if I was a team behind the Texans in the draft, because it feels like he is seeing the board and he is in total control and he's in his zone right now.
Yeah, he's in his bag.
He is ready to go. I mean, he basically told us we're open for business. We're making moves.
Yeah,
like that to me is like, and I mean, 8 trades last year, 7 trades the year before.
Yeah, it's the most dependable action that you can have with Nick Caserio in the draft is that he is going to wheel and deal in some form or fashion.
I see people all the time on social media like, oh, over 1.5 trades. I'm like, I want to bet at your sports book because that's the easiest money in the world.
Yeah. 1.5?
That's going to be over 1.5. He may make 1.5 trades before they're on the clock.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, to me, the biggest thing is he did not dispel the notion that there's something that you would be concerned about with Stephon Diggs, but he also addressed why Stephon Diggs might have been unhappy when he talked about, hey, you look at the situation he was in, and the situation here is different. And that's the biggest conversation.
It's kind of a flex.
That's the biggest conversation about Stephon Diggs being happy in Houston is the situation being better. Like the quarterback more, like the coach more. And then the ball goes to a teammate, and you actually feel like it's worthy to go to a teammate if you're Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, but he also, I felt, downplayed the, and he was asked about the restructuring of the contract, because there is this narrative or idea that part of that was to motivate him extra and to keep them, I guess, off the hook past this year. Now, of course, he deflects, but that is part of the conversation. Like, did you guys, you know, how much confidence do you have in Stephon Diggs past this year?
He did work around that, answering that with a clear and decisive answer. He worked around
what
that.
What does disappointment look like for you when it comes to this draft? For me, I just need a wide receiver. I mean, not a wide receiver. I need a tight end. I need a running back in some way, shape, or form. What does disappointment look like for you? Because I think there's a way bigger margin for error at this point with where we are.
I would think disappointment looks like a prioritization of 2025 and not 2024. And he talked about it today that some of this draft class is behind physically, and so maybe day one they're not ready to help you, and maybe you make a selection for 2025. So if they had a draft that was like a couple of offensive linemen that you know aren't playing right away and a couple of project players, like that would be kind of disappointing. I still believe there's opportunities to add contributors to the 2024 team.
Yeah, well, see, I'm going to push back on that, because is that really disappointing based off of how good, and I don't know necessarily how you feel, I'm not going to speak for you, but like the narrative about how well they've done already up until this point, like there's this feeling that the Texans could go out and play a football game today. And so would it not be smart money to be planning toward the future, given all that you've already done toward 2024? Like, they damn near got a team built.
Correct. And if they went and played a football game today, I'd be scared to death that Joe Mixon's not carrying the football because of an injury, or he's got to come off the field because he needs a rest.
You're not on Damian Pierce comeback season yet?
No.
All right. Just checking for the record.
I'd be scared to death that Dalton Schultz is the only tight end that you can consistently rely on this team. I'd be scared about the depth at safety. And I know we got a Brandon Hill mention, but all we got was that Brandon Hill has an opportunity to make the team. That was the mention.
Well, and also that he was the only one who didn't contribute last year.
Yeah. Correct.
I'm sure he felt great about that.
It was basically like, well, we only had one guy not contribute last year, so
but he's back.
That was a low key Caserio flex too, because it's like, hey, remember that awesome draft class that I had literally everybody but the seventh round guy contribute at some point?
You know what y'all should have done?
And you can't dismiss him.
You know what you should have done? Said. Followed up with that 2022 draft. They're like, hey, is Christian Harris and Derek Stingley's hamstrings not carrying in that draft right now?
That is my favorite part about the draft grade conversation, is because to an extent, I kind of understand why a guy like Nick Caserio would hate Monday morning draft grades. I don't know if he wants us to always go back and look at, you know, like 2021 draft grades.
No. Yeah, right. It's been some time. Right. Cody Stutes in the building, straight from the Caserio presser. Coming up, time to get transparent. Let's have a little lunchtime confessions, Texan style. And, man, I made my mom cry today. I feel like a slime ball. Should I, though? We'll discuss with some confessions coming up next.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
All right, lunchtime confessions. We confess our sins to you, the Loophole. Shout out to the Loopholes. If you listen, you are one. Some of these confessions have to do with sports. Some have nothing to do with sports, but we're transparent with you 24/7. Let it hang a little bit lower during lunchtime confessions. It is time to confess. Watch this. These are my confessions. I want Jatavion Sanders to be the Texans pick at 42. I am hearing the pushback, I'm hearing the hesitation, I'm hearing the questions about blocking, I feel like he's an upgrade over Andrew Beck. I feel like he's an upgrade over Brevin Jordan. I feel like he adds versatility to this offense. And I feel like if we're playing chess 2 years from now, he could be a better player than Dalton Schultz. Maybe you can list like bigger needs in the near future, but for me, I am almost becoming obsessed with the possibility of Jatavion Sanders.
And when was the last time they drafted, maybe it was Brevin Jordan a few years ago, but when was the last time they drafted a tight end that you were truly excited about? I feel like maybe Brevin, just because of where they were in, you know, the state of the franchise, you're trying to find something to be excited about.
Okay.
But
backhanded compliment.
But I mean, I'm just saying, truly excited about the tight end that the team is drafting. Been a while.
Owen Daniels?
Oh, my God.
So here's my Jatavion Sanders thing. There's not a question about his blocking. He just doesn't block. Like he doesn't do it. He's not motivated to do it. When he tries, he's bad at it.
He was hurt last year.
Okay, blocking's a toughness thing. Tough it out.
Well, he was toughing it out. He's playing hurt.
Yeah, he was toughing it out, and he was awful at it. Now, I'm with you.
Awful's a little bit of a stretch. And they were moving him in motion, all that. You sound like John Harris. This is what happens with football hardos like Cody Stoops and John Harris. They treat tight ends like, oh, you got to go in there and block.
No.
You got to go in there and block. You got to block.
They kind of do, though.
What's Mark Andrews doing? This is the same thing that was being said about him.
This is a Landry Locker. This is a tried and true strategy. He cuts you off before he lets you finish. The guy can't block. I'm fine with it. Because if this offensive line would just block better than it did last year, you don't need as much help from the tight ends.
But do you need three tight ends who don't block?
Well, bye-bye Brevin Jordan.
Why does Brevin Jordan have an automatic slot on this team?
Yeah.
Do you replace him with another tight end who can't block? That's what I'm saying. Like, I get it, but how many tight ends who can't block do you want?
They had like 7 different blocking-only tight ends last year. Like, you can find the blocking-only tight end. There's a bunch of the blocking-only tight ends. There's not a lot of Jatavion Sanders running around there.
I'm pushing back only to agree that I would love to have.
Well, here's Jatavion the other Sanders. Thing. Here's the other thing. Like, I don't like it's all about versatility. Like, we always talk about versatility. So say what you want about him. They do. He can catch balls out of the backfield. Like, he can do that. He's better at Andrew Beck at doing that. He can be a prototypical receiving tight end. I mean, he runs circles around Brevin Jordan when it comes to that. He's not as explosive, isn't as fast. And all this talk about receiver, hey, we want to add a receiver and whatnot, you can put him in the slot if you want to. You can do that. So it's just one of those. I think he would add a completely different element. I don't want to judge him by his block. Like, are we judging Brock Bowers by blocking?
He's not great at it, but he's going to try.
I forgot about the water polo tight end, which was a hallmark moment on this show. But that was one that people were excited about.
People were excited about Kahale wearing. He played football for like 2 years.
Who was excited?
That's what I'm seeing on the text line.
No, you're wrong on that one.
And that guy.
Yeah, don't compare him to Sanders. That's that guy. A little much.
Watch this. These are my confessions.
I'm a little bit worried about the Washington Nationals this weekend, man.
Oh, come on.
I don't want to be in this place. But the Astros, so damn sorry, 20 games into the season. And Justin Verlander, God bless him, I'm glad to have him back. I'd rather have him than what we've seen in the back end of this rotation. But I feel like the Astros have transitioned to that team that you don't fear as much when they come up on your schedule, and you can't take for granted when you see teams that have been bad, when you see the Kansas City Royals on your schedule, when you see the Washington Nationals on your schedule, and then you go look at the standings and realize that they're better than you. It's not a good feeling. It's not a good feeling. I'm worried about this series over the weekend, that they might not be as good as the Nationals.
I can honestly tell you I cannot name 3 Washington Nationals.
I don't think you need to.
Does Brad Wilkerson still play for them?
You can name 3 Astros, but they sorry as hell right now. What does that do for you?
Well, it makes Alex Bregman a really attractive trade option at the deadline this year.
Put a pin in that.
Hey, by the way, props to Espada for putting him in the 2-hole. Did look good yesterday.
Bregman? No, he batted third.
I mean batting third. Putting him between Tuck and
yeah.
Left Alvarez, yeah. Split the left.
It was a good
that's
move.
What I meant.
Look at you giving Joe Espada some credit. What got into you?
He deserves credit for
somebody
that.
Somebody check this man's temperature.
Watch this. These are my confessions.
CJ Stroud got me excited about John Mechie.
No, he didn't.
C.J. Stroud excited about John Metchie.
They will curse you on this. Don't do that, Stoops.
Thanks for coming in.
They'll curse you on this show for saying positive things or even having a positive outlook on John Metchie.
Oh, come on. He's our guy.
But just because I got excited about John Metchie, I still want them to draft a wide receiver. I just feel like you can change. I want the third round pick to be a wide receiver.
All right, let's lay that out. Let's get into the wide receiver thing coming up in like 10 minutes because I feel like you have scenarios for that. But you're excited about John Metchie.
You're 2 years removed from the ACL injury. You're a year further removed from the illness that he dealt with, beating cancer, got his feet wet. They've talked about how, I mean, if D'Amico Ryans is going to tell me that Christian Harris basically was a rookie last year, then so was John Metchie. And so, all right, fifth wide receiver, sixth wide receiver. I'm not talking about I forego all long-term plans because of him. Just got a little excited. You know, CJ's been out there throwing to him, so I got to see something. Watch this.
I made my mom cry more than I've ever seen my mom cry in her entire life this morning.
Slime ball.
And we've been through a lot. So it's not like one of those where people say, I've never seen my parents cry. I've seen my mom bawl. I've never heard my mom bawl like hysterically more than I heard her cry this morning. It kind of shook me up like even talking about it. But it was a misunderstanding.
Oh, no.
So the other day I came home on a Friday, and there was a piece of the stairs. There was like a long thread on the stairs that was missing. You can see it right here. You see that little rip right there?
Yep.
I'm showing it on the YouTube. You see that like clean, smooth rip right there?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We didn't think anything of it. We thought maybe it got vacuumed over. Maybe, you know, the dog had grabbed it or whatever. The baby likes to grab now, so she had pulled it. It's about a 1.5 foot rip. So didn't think much of it, weren't thrilled about it, but didn't think a ton of it. This weekend, from Monday to Wednesday, my dog, who's the craziest dog in the world, has been acting really, 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 really lethargic. She's been puking, she can't eat, she can't sleep, and we took her to the vet on Tuesday. And they took the x-ray. They said, okay, if she keeps getting worse, bring her back. I was like, okay. We brought her back. And the process ended up that they decided she needs surgery. Like, she needed emergency surgery. So she had emergency surgery last night. And we got the call from the doc. The doc said, look, this could have been really bad. We actually got to look at her for pneumonia. She just woke up.
Damn.
We got what was in her body. There was some leaves and all this type of stuff. And we also found this long, 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 long piece of thread that was tied from her tongue to her esophagus to her stomach to where she wasn't able to eat. And I was like, dude, she must have eaten the damn stairs and it didn't digest because it got tied around her tongue because it was such a long thing to where she couldn't eat or anything like that. So she woke up this morning. They say that she's breathing. They're monitoring her and all that type of stuff. And if she eats at 7, she can come home or whatever, blah, blah, blah. So I call my mom and I tell my mom about this. I'm just like, you know, not casually. Yeah, you know, she's been sick for the last couple days. We took her in.
It's
and
just
yada,
an
yada.
Update. You're not like.
I'm just telling her what's up.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, why didn't either one of y'all stay at the hospital? She's like, you're going to work. You're going to do the show. And Holly's at home. Why didn't either one? She's like bawling, like crying. And I'm like, I mean, there's nothing we can do. Like, there's nothing we can do. And she wants to sleep. I don't want to interrupt her sleep and have her acting weird. And she's like just bawling, like hysterically, like acting like she has to get off the phone, talking about praying and stuff like this. And I'm just like, bro, what is going on? Like, she's almost making me cry because of mom. She thought I was talking about my daughter, just leaving my daughter at the hospital, and that me and my wife were just going about our day, and I was going to work, and we had left my daughter at the hospital.
So you didn't make it clear on the front end
of
the conversation?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Because I didn't know.
But it's Casey and it's Avery, so maybe she just heard the E.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so she thought I would just left my daughter at the hospital.
Oh, that's incredible.
It was just like sitting there, oh, yeah, wait, no, I can go get her maybe, you know, at 6 or 7, and we could go figure it out. You think I'd be going to work if that happened?
Hey, so the one way I know this would never have happened with my family is because we don't always necessarily call the dog by his name. The dog is our dog's name is Dominic.
Yeah.
I would have started that conversation not with Dominic.
The dog.
The dog.
Yeah.
And it would have been very clear very early on.
I was sitting there like,
the dog, like, mama. The dog.
How relieved was she once you clarified what the situation
was?
Dude,
she's weird. She's a weird crier where she like cries more with based on what the fear of what it initially was. And she was like, I was going to get off the phone and I was going to pray that, you know, pray for her. And I didn't want to lecture you and tell you how to raise your kid. But I just thought, I was like, my God. All right, bye.
Yeah.
I got to go.
No.
Talk to you later.
If that's
bye.
The confusion, though, justifiably upset, because that would have made y'all the ultimate slime balls.
Oh, I would. Come on. I mean.
I know better. I know better.
That's crazy.
I know better. I got
that's you. Wild. That was a little much. That's Lunchtime Confessions. Coming up, Cody Stutz sees a scenario where the Texans could draft a wide receiver. He's thinking third round. Could they get greedy and make their first pick a wide receiver despite Stephon Diggs? In the Loop continues next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Cody Stutz joining Landry Locker, B. Scott, live from the Nick Caserio press conference. Texans going to be drafting in 8 days if stuff holds up. Kind of a dangerous assumption to make, though, if you ever Caserio. Cody, wide receiver. It appeared to be very highly likely when they were originally at 22. They've traded back, or 23, excuse me. They've traded back to 42. What scenario, I'm going to ask you two questions. What scenario would you draft a receiver at 42? And when do you think they should draft a wide receiver if you believe that they should?
I wrote about this at Houston Football this morning.
Are you going John McClain? You're just going to tease your column, not give us a...
And I'm gonna give you what I said in there.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
There are two players.
I actually read it too, by the way.
I did too. He loved it.
There are two players at 42 where if I was Nick Caserio, I'd be tripping over myself to get to the phone to dial the number to run the card in. Now, unfortunately, I don't believe either of these guys are there. That's Ladd McConkey from Georgia, and that's Adonai Mitchell from Texas.
He could be there.
He's got diabetes, man.
He got diabetes, man. People are saying, and they say it affects
that's
his mood.
Give him whatever drugs he needs.
No, I'm saying that might drop him, though.
And Mark Andrews. It's the Mark Andrews rule.
Affects his mood, huh? I know what his mood is. It's dominate cornerbacks. I mean, so if it makes him a meaner SOB on the field, go for it. I don't care. Spike the insulin or whatever you need to. You know?
Don't do that. I can speak to don't.
You know,
spike
I don't know
insulin.
What is it.
Please don't spike the
whatever
insulin.
The thing is. Those two guys, I would just do whatever I can to immediately get the call in if I was Nick Caserio. If those two guys were there,
see, I'm not. There's two things that I look at. Like if you're telling me that diabetes is the reason why Mitchell's falling, first of all, I ignore it for two reasons. Number one, Mark Andrews, he has diabetes. Jay Cutler had diabetes, and number two, one of the hardest working mofos I know has diabetes, and all I do is see him taking down cancer sticks, fast food, and the occasional alcoholic beverage, and it doesn't impact his work ethic whatsoever. As a matter of fact, I wonder when the hell he sleeps. And yeah. He's actually to my right
man,
now.
Man, you see all these damn bags under my eyes? I'm here for a good time, not a long time. So make it happen, baby.
I think those are the only two guys I'd take at 42. I'd be foolish to ignore some of the other stuff.
Wide receiver specifically.
So McConkey out of Georgia, McConkey.
Yep.
And Adonai Mitchell. What about Xavier Worthy?
I would not take him at 42.
I would really? Not either. I would not either.
Here's my issue with Xavier Worthy.
Y'all have to hold me back, though. Y'all have to pull my collar.
And he will not win a contested catch in the NFL. He didn't win it in college.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's
a fair critique.
People said the same thing about Tank Dell last year, and the biggest conversation with Worthy is, well, he doesn't have contested catches if guys aren't near him. Okay, well, you don't just run straight past people in the NFL. Okay, they get nasty with you at the line of scrimmage. Defenses are more prepared for you. And if he and the defender arrive at the ball at the same time, there's a 0% chance he's catching the football. He just is not going to win. He's not big enough to win contested catches at the NFL level. So I can't do that at 42, not when there's defensive tackles, safeties, maybe cornerbacks that this team should go at. Now, the other second-round pick, line them up. There's a bunch of dudes I would take with that other second round pick. There's a bunch of guys. Obviously,
okay,
the
I
two.
I want to hear these names because there's some interesting names that could potentially be there at 59. I know we were big Troy Franklin guys.
Yeah, I'm shocked to see you earlier. Have Troy Franklin as low as you got him.
Like, yeah. to John Harris be hates him. John Harris seems really? To hate him. He doesn't think he fits in.
Okay.
I like Franklin probably more than John Harris does. I'm worried again about like the slightness and how versatile and useful he is day one. Like that's my biggest thing with these second round picks is the Parcells thing. What can you do for me day one when you step on the field wearing your Texans uniform? Like what can you do? And so Franklin's day one is to me not as good as the day one of some of these other guys.
So the ones that got me excited from your piece that I'm fixated on at 59 is Ricky Pearsall and Keon Coleman. Tell me you truly
Keon
believe that.
Keon Coleman is weird because
if they're there at 59, I'm going to have a tough time.
Well, Keon was a guy who, like, watching college football this year, you heard, well, man, is this guy going to be a top 15 pick? Then he runs a 4.6, and now all of a sudden people are basically calling him Kelvin Benjamin. The other thing that Harris brought up, I think you brought up, Stutes, is, yeah, but his in-game speed was the highest of any wide receiver during the combine.
He's
so thinking about 22 miles
baller.
An hour.
He's a baller.
He ran the gauntlet drill the fastest of any wide receiver in the combine this year. The guy that did that last year was Puka Nacua, and people had concerns about his speed, and Puka Nacua was the best rookie wide receiver in football last year. He's one of the best wide receivers in football
already
last year.
Yep.
I am falling in love with Keon Coleman because I feel like there's an untapped potential to him because people will go and be box score bozos about him, not realizing that his quarterback's leg fell off in the middle of the year and there was a backup jabroni throwing him the ball.
Yeah,
Two of them.
It happened.
And you want to talk about usefulness day one, he can play special teams, kickoff returns, punt returns, and he's totally different than what they have at the wide receiver position right now. He has a unique skill set compared to Tank Dell, Stephon Diggs, Nico Collins, Noah Brown.
Well, and he's also the antithesis to what we were just talking about with Xavier Worthy. Talking about he's never going to win a contested catch. This dude might win all of them.
There's no 50-50 balls with Keon Coleman. There's only 70-30 balls, and he's the 70.
I can't believe how much he's dropped. I'm actually pretty fascinated by it.
That it feels like the diamond in the rough. When I was reading this morning, I was like, man, you really think Keon Coleman's going to be there at 59?
Yesterday, I brought him up, and people were comparing him, and this is that school crap, but they were comparing him to Kelvin Benjamin. Dude, Kelvin Benjamin was like 270 pounds.
I believe we will look at Keon Coleman like we look at DK Metcalf when we all look around and say, all the signs were there, why wasn't he picked earlier?
DK was an athletic freak, though.
Well, there's some freakiness to Keon Coleman. Not a lot of guys can go up and get the ball like him. You get the steel trap for hands. Man, I'm falling in love with Keon Coleman.
So we all are. But so why would he fall that far down? But I cannot believe that the actual evaluators are going to be as dumb and as pigheaded as like the draft conversation with, you know, the majority of us schmucks out here who are just like, 40 time, you can't draft him. I feel like they should know better than that.
So here's why he would fall. And I think it's two-pronged thing. One, good players at other positions push him down the board. Offensive linemen, some cornerbacks.
His own deep position.
His own deep position, safeties. And then I don't believe he's done a lot to change people's minds if they didn't like him. And Daniel Jeremiah talked about this. He had a draft call yesterday, and I was listening to it. He got the information about the gauntlet drill and how fast he ran it. And he said, I immediately texted it to two GMs. One GM I knew that hated Keon Coleman and one GM that I knew that loved Keon Coleman. He said the guy that loved him was like, this is one of the reasons we like this guy is the game speed is faster than the workout
speed. Just like Tank.
And then
yeah,
the guy that hated Keon Coleman, the guy said, I don't really care about that. And then Jeremiah was like, I don't know that people would say they don't care about the
game
GPS
speed.
Data, which is something that's new that's popped up, is like the guys on the field. Guys from bigger schools have it more than guys from smaller
Texans
schools.
Texans are obsessed with it, by the way.
Yeah. I was going to say, that sounds like a GM that's going to get fired pretty soon at some point.
If that felt like an old GM.
Yeah, that sounded like a back of the baseball card type of GM.
That felt like...
the hell is going on? Sound like a dude that's reading the football cards instead of like, you know...
Yeah, so I like Keon Coleman. You mentioned White Boy Ricky. I like Ricky Purcell.
Big, big fan.
Again, immediate impact. I think day one you make him the kickoff return guy with the new kickoff rules. I think Frank Ross would be over the moon if that guy was in the building. And then the reason you think about wide receiver is long term, you know, right now as we talk, Nico Collins is set to be a free agent. Noah Brown's set to be a free agent. Stephon Diggs is set to be a free agent.
Woods. So
like Robert Woods is set to be a free agent.
If he's on the team.
Like,
and the likelihood that either Stephon Diggs, because all these guys are set to be a free agent as you just laid out. But the likelihood that one of those two guys, Stephon Diggs or Nico Collins, is going to play well enough for you to want to extend them, to pay them, like you're going to probably pay a wide receiver at the end of the year more than likely. So why not, you know, supplement for the fact that you're going to more than likely lose one?
And that's the long-term thought. The short-term thought is, well, in 2024, I mean, Nico Collins has a injury history. Tank Dell has an injury history. Noah Brown has an injury history. I mean, John Mechie and Xavier Hutchinson didn't exactly give you a ton last year. And the profiles of some of these guys that you'd be thinking about are, I could put them on the field right away and have them be a factor. Like, I just think wide receiver makes a lot of sense.
The other thing about wide receiver is, and we talked about this at the start of the show, Cody Stutes from Nick Caserio's press conference to your radio here on In the Loop Sports Radio 610, Landry Larker, B. Scott, Figgy Fig. The other thing is, GMs are getting real proactive when it comes to not wanting to pay wide receivers. And wide receivers, unlike running backs, unlike most positions, like four of them over the course of a game are going to make plays that perhaps you win you the game. It's not like one has to be on the field and whatnot. So I actually don't think you should ever eliminate the possibility of drafting a wide receiver, especially in today's NFL. Like if you would have just the mindset that we're approaching, and I don't know if I'm dating myself or not. I mean, is 90s dating yourself perhaps? Like, the Minnesota Vikings technically didn't need Randy Moss when he fell to him. And it was different circumstances, but they had Jake Reed, they had Chris Carter. They didn't necessarily need that. They made the pick, man.
But it was Randy Moss.
And they made the pick.
And so you don't – the thing that I don't get about the wide receiver conversation for anybody who's like, hey, we've got enough, it's like, are we ignoring the fact that you put out three and four of them out there at a time? At a time.
At a time, yeah.
At a time.
And that
– what position group is like that where you put out three and four at a time and you're like, oh, I got two, I'm good. I got two I feel great about. Three I feel great about. I'm good.
The other thing about the Texans that I think is wild is that if you could treat this like a slime ball playing Madden and you could just turn injuries off, which, by the way, if you ever turn injuries off in Madden, you're one of the biggest weasels in the history of the world. I remember in the Mike Vick Madden, my friend would pick the Falcons and he would turn injuries off.
Yeah, that's fair. He didn't want you decapitating his quarterback.
Mike Vick can't get hurt. That's fair. Yeah. But if you could do that, then you could sell yourself pretty heavily on the Texans. Like if Derek Stingley's not going to get hurt, then hell, I might not even need a corner.
See?
If Tank Dell or Nico Collins aren't going to get hurt, then hell, you might be able to convince me I don't need a wide receiver. But you can't turn injuries off. This is not Madden.
And see, the issue that I'm having with all of this, the thing that I'm not doing with the wide receivers, which is not turning injuries off, I feel like I've done exactly that with the secondary.
I've done it with Stingley.
I've just pretended like, oh, Derek Stingley's never going to get hurt again.
Honestly,
Jimmy Ward's not closer to my age than he is the rookies.
That's why 42 to me, unless it's a super special guy that's kind of a no-brainer for where he is, 42's got to be something else on this team, something probably over on the defensive side, hopefully in the defensive secondary.
Speaking of the secondary, there's a polarizing prospect that one of the biggest voices in media, especially this time of the year, says the Texans should select and then change his position. We'll hear who we're talking about. We'll also hear what Nick Caserio had to say about Stephon Diggs next.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.